This clip is going to be approximately 35 minutes in duration. Inadequacy is a pervasive phenomenon, and as we explored in this chapter, it has both biological origins as well as ontological origins. To unpack a little bit of both, I want to first start with the biographical. And the biographical has its origins in your pre-verbal experience. And so just to acknowledge that actually your history here in this particular body mind, in this vehicle, likely has experiences and probably many experiences of not being adequate prior to you even acquiring language. This first shows up likely in the first months of life, probably the first weeks of life, in fact, where you have some need that arises and it's not met in a responsive and an attuned way. And the basic response, perhaps, is inadequacy. So we have to really appreciate the depth that inadequacy can reach into, that your story, your conception, your understanding of your life, and the narrative that holds the story and meaning of who you are, inadequacy reaches back prior to that and is likely rooted in some very just root experiences of being profoundly disappointed and disturbed and deeply challenged. And this is the root of inadequacy, at least in the biographical sense. Once language comes online, we start to take in messages that are called introjects. And introjects, if you're not familiar with this term, are messages that we've been given from usually our parents. It might be a coach, it might be a teacher, it might be a sibling, it might be a babysitter, it might be an aunt or an uncle. Some external reference point is telling you a story about you, giving you an interpretive lens to make sense of yourself. And parts of childhood are what we call pre-reflective. So prior to you even having the ability to reflect on whether or not these are accurate or how they're accurate or when they're accurate and when they're inaccurate, we're actually just taking in messages whole. Now, introjects in part are going to be immensely positive. We're going to take in, like, I can do it. We're going to take in certain types of self-confidence. But we're also going to take in introjects that I refer to as acidic. And these introjects are those messages that are not positive. They actually erode our self-esteem. And so these stories of us being inadequate start to settle in, and we become those messages in a very real and direct way. We are governed by those beliefs. And it's not until later on in adulthood, maybe in adolescence, that we can reflect on those and start to challenge them. But oftentimes these introjects that get laid down early on remain with us and have tremendous power well into adulthood. And so introjects give us another layer of inadequacy that's verbally based. Now, once reflective consciousness shows up, we can start to reflect on the stories, the introjects, the messages that we've been telling ourselves and been told from other people around us. We can start to reflect on them and assess, well, does it actually fit? Is it actually true? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But the challenge is that this reflective capacity for sure comes online in a really strong way, usually around 10, 11, 12 years of age. But because we haven't actually started to orient towards an internal authority until we get into the self-authoring mind, this fourth order consciousness that Robert Keegan talks about. So while the reflective consciousness is present and it's in potentiality, it can reflect upon the messages that we've been getting, we're likely not to apply that reflective consciousness to the interjected stories until much later. Now, the exception is in the psychotherapeutic setting, because consciously reflecting on and working with introjects is one of the core features of doing psychotherapy. Let's actually look at the story and see what fits, what doesn't. So I want to briefly talk about psychotherapy and how it intersects with working with introjects. And first, I just want to say that there's tremendous benefit looking at our introjects, our messages, our stories, our more habituated interpretations of our life. And by doing this, we create greater and greater narrative integration. And narrative integration is strongly correlated with your neurological integration. So the brain and the nervous system get much more integrated the more comprehensive and interwoven your story is, your narrative of your life. But here's the problem. Oftentimes in growth from third order to fourth order, we're actually freeing ourselves of an external authority that's actually governed us. It's commanded how we perceive ourselves, how we understand ourselves, how we make sense of ourselves. Even when nobody else is around, that message that came from the coach or came from the teacher or came from mom or dad or maybe a sibling, that message is still in the power position, and that person out there is still in the power position. And so one of the major thrusts that we find in a tremendous amount of psychotherapeutic work is let's actually pull ourselves out of that relationship so that we can start to touch into our own inner directed authority. And here's the problem. Because when you can start to author your story from inside, you actually have a choice. Do you want a story that includes inadequacy, or do you want to author and create a story that is free of inadequacy? And our most basic response is to start to weave stories that exclude, that push away, that try to get rid of inadequacy. So we're oftentimes we get consumed by this drive to author, to create a sphere of stories and narrative interpretations, as well as a behavioral sphere that I'm competent in, that I can keep feeling inadequacy at bay. And that's part of the beauty of fourth order, is we can actually create a tremendous amount of relative freedom from feeling inadequate. And we can steer ourselves to really stay in the parts of our competence and where we thrive and where we're effective and where we are tremendously skilled and nuanced in terms of how we operate in the world. The problem is that the psychological intoxication with the belief that you can author or get rid of some facet of your experience is quite pervasive. the risk or the danger is, of course, when we consider the self-authoring mind is not a place to stop developing. So if we're sincerely interested in continuing development, the risk or danger is that we're actually successful in creating a relatively free pocket of functioning where we can avoid inadequacy in its many forms. And so shifting gears, let's look at professional trainings and certifications, right? Because the psychotherapeutic realm works with inadequacy in a particular way. And many of it is super helpful to how do we actually grow outside and beyond our socialized mind, right? And there's a similar transition between going from the socialized mind to the self-authoring mind around professional trainings and certifications. But we spend, as human beings, spend tremendous amounts of resources on trainings, certifications, degrees to avoid inadequacy. My invitation to you as a practice, as an exercise, is to discern whether or not you are engaging in this training or these certifications or these degree programs because you're sincerely interested in polishing and refining yourself, or are you actually signing up and enrolling in various trainings because you have some hope that you're going to train yourself out of experiencing inadequacy? And sometimes it's a mixture of the two, but I really want you to slow down and pause and explore rigorously, what am I doing right now? Am I simply trying to add more competence, more training, so that I can somehow get out of experiencing inadequacy? Or is it just more of a sincere, like, I genuinely want to polish this part of myself? One of the ways that I saw this in my own life was when I was graduating from graduate school, and I had just finished a three-year program in training to become a psychotherapist. What I saw in my peers was virtually all of them were diving into further trainings. Let me get a specialization in EMDR. Let me specialize and do extra years of training in Gestalt therapy. The diversity of options is almost infinite. But what I saw and what I was tremendously suspicious of was that even before getting into the field and really actually working, like in actually finding out what is it like to actually sit with another human being in the therapeutic context and really get immersed in that particular tradition, we're like oftentimes consumed by this desire to load up and continue to train and continue to add on more little symbols after the name as a means of I just don't want to experience feeling like I don't know what to do, right? And the more tools and the more kind of certifications I have, the more certain I can think myself to be. And of course, this endeavor doesn't work, right? So trainings can be really important. You can gain tremendous amounts of skill, but if they get hijacked, right, and if the core driving intention is so that you don't experience your inadequacy, you're setting yourself up for a nasty trap, right? Because you're never going to stop encountering a world that has more avenues to explore, more trainings, more expertise. They're perhaps infinite in number. And you're never going to know all of them. You'll never actually get rid of this experience of being inadequate. So let's take a look at the other side, the ontological dimension of inadequacy. And this is where we start to see how incredibly important inadequacy is on an existential level. And form, everything that has form, is intrinsically limited. And perhaps one of the core existential features of being in form is to feel, is to know some level of inadequacy. And this root experience of being inadequate, it actually gives rise to your drive to become more. And this is where inadequacy starts having a very interesting conversation with your aliveness, your vitality, your zest for life, your passion, your essential drive that resides and pervades inside of you to go beyond whatever is present right now. And so when we get stuck in these more fourth order orientations of, I really want to kind of not experience inadequacy anymore, this agenda is a massive betrayal to your life force. It is a betrayal to your aliveness. So there's two basic mistakes or errors that tend to be loops that hang people up, some for decades on end and some just indefinitely for the rest of their life. And the first major mistake is to look outside of yourself for those highly accomplished, presumably like very gifted people who can be your authority and who can direct you and guide you in a particular path. The second mistake is don't collude with your own inner creative drives, your own inner directed initiatives. And this one is confusing for most people. Like, most adults kinda understand, I need to be the authority in here. But when we're talking about this rich topic of elegance, it's not sufficient. It's actually quite far from sufficient. It's actually quite dangerous. And if anything, it's a pervasive betrayal of your precious and unique elegance. This sets up a particularly challenging scenario because the conventional reference points of, one, that external authority, and two, the internal inner directed authority inside of you, neither of them are a safe haven. Neither of them are adequate. And this is in part what makes transitions between the self-authoring mind and the self-transforming mind so challenging. So when you are engaged in your training, when you are actually finding yourself in a coaching context, or maybe it's a psychotherapeutic context, or maybe it's in the educational setting, I want you to look at it as a participatory endeavor. The key phrase, in my opinion, is this moment is a co-creative participation where the authority resides inside of or between the co-creative parties involved. And that might just be you and your coach. It might be between you and somebody presenting. It might be between you and a group. But this emphasis towards participatory engagement and co-creative participation. It's there's something in the intersection that is really, really important. And so look closely at this intersection between you and the complexity of the people and environment that you're immersed in. Listen with immense curiosity. Don't just listen with your ears, listen with your whole body, mind. Sense with immense curiosity, see with immense curiosity, feel with immense curiosity. Because the co-creative thread of aliveness that we're discussing, that is rooted it's rooted inside of inadequacy. It doesn't belong to you. It doesn't belong to your coach, your trainer. It doesn't belong to any one person or entity. It actually belongs to the relationship between. And this relationship creates a tension. It is an alchemical mixture that is occurring, and it's happening right now. There's some movement towards a dynamic integration of this and something else. And sometimes it's going to arise more from inside of you. And sometimes it's going to arise from the people around you. And the feature that I want you to look for is to be surprised, to be completely drawn in by some facet of what's emerging. And it is going to be in part in relationship to your own effort, and it's going to be in part in relation to the coach or the trainer or the presenter that is bringing something of importance. It's going to be in this intersection. But when you allow yourself to participate with this dynamic integration, this alchemical tension between entities, this is where elegance gets born. There's a simple and ingenious responsive adaptation. And that creative novelty is precious and powerful and should be cultivated and defended rigorously. Now, you will not find this level of attunement with the vast majority of facilitators. If Robert Keegan's research is any indication, less than 1% of people offering coaching, offering training, getting in front of groups of people and doing presentations, less than 1% of them are going to be able to perceive this level of nuance. So you have to be mindful of that. And that doesn't mean that they can't help you. You can actually have somebody firmly in third order or fourth order or second order. It doesn't matter. What matters is your orientation. Where are you coming from? And can then you participate with the elegance that is both totally you and it doesn't belong to you at all? It washes through you as a wave, as a conduit of circuit of energy that you're merely borrowing for this brief flicker of aliveness that's happening right now. So if you do happen to find a facilitator or coach or somebody who can resonate at this frequency that we're discussing, I really want to encourage you to, whoever it is and whatever the context, deepen your relationship with this person or deepen this relationship with this particular group of people, perhaps. These are the people you want to be with. And you cannot rest upon your own autonomous drive and initiative. And we're such co-creative beings. One of the great figures in developmental psychology is a man named Vygotsky. And his smallest unit of measurement is a person in activity participating in a cultural context. So he's pointing in this direction, if you will, that actually people aren't so separate from the culture and the environment and the activity that they are immersed in. And if we're actually going to get a better perspective of human beings and how do they function, we have to study them in that context and with that complexity in mind. And I think there's a lot of brilliance to Vygotsky's work. But why I bring up Vygotsky right now is that when you are privileged enough and are capable of finding somebody who can participate with their own elegance as well as help draw it out of you, that cultural support is so immensely helpful. And so while the vast majority of trainings and coaching and therapeutic and educational settings simply fall short from a developmental perspective on this, if you do find that needle in the haystack, recognize it and nurture it, because it really will make a huge difference. In the meantime, while you're searching for these highly accomplished beings who can actually cultivate and help you nurture your own elegance into the world so that you can become more influential and participate with something that's much more precious, just expect that you're going to walk into a whole range of trainings and certifications and degree programs and psychotherapeutic contexts and coaching contexts where the authority that the person takes will unknowingly trounce on this creative possibility that we're discussing right now. And they'll often trounce upon it unknowingly as a display of their autonomous self. And this is ultimately what they worship. And this is ultimately where their allegiance is to their autonomous functioning. And the better they can do that from their perspective, the more you're going to actually respect them, and the more you're going to look up to them, and the more power dynamics can get exchanged, and presumably the happier they will be. And this is one of the central invisible threats facing our world, and in particular our youth. And I'm not going to go into it deeply right now, but I will say that the concept of enslavement is something that we have to be mindful of. Because if a leader starts to assert, this is the way, this is how it's done, and it doesn't matter if we're talking about therapy or facilitating conflict or how leadership is done or how do you close a sales, when we inhabit our autonomous conviction that I've got the way and you just need to learn it, this is a enslavement of our youth. And I'll unpack this more in depth when I pick up The Elegant Leader. When I write that volume, I'm going to dive pretty deeply in on this issue, but I want to just presence it right now, because we have to acknowledge that when we pick up that story and get intoxicated by our own inner-directed competence, which in some cases is beautiful and it's appropriate and it needs to be there, right? But what I'm continually fascinated by is how immensely creative youth is and how generative they are. And fourth order self-authoring minds are clumsy and lacking tremendous volumes of elegance in terms of ushering youth into their own creative genius. And that is something that our world desperately needs. And so as professionals ourselves, how do we relate to our youth, as well as professionals, how do we relate to our other more accomplished and more practiced mentors and leaders? We have to be very, very careful on both sides of this equation. Because if we get entirely intoxicated by our own autonomy and our own drive or somebody else's, we start to lose the attunement to this creative and dynamic tension that's between. And we, as you'll read later on in the book, we start to clear-cut immense complexity and immense diversity. And this is one of the major tragedies happening in our world day in day. So, my final point. One, I'm taking a position of authority with you right now. And I encourage you, take it in, right? And acknowledge, wow, like this, you know, this chapter is complete, right? And I'm about to finish talking this section. It will become a complete artifact in and of itself. And find the creative, dynamic tension between the words that are coming out of my mouth right now and your entire being. What is the sincere, novel emergence that is happening between us right now, this artifact of this book, and your aliveness? There's an unknown potentiality that's resting right here. Don't turn me into a static authority. You are the living intelligence, and you can participate with a complexity that's actually here right now. And what is to emerge is actually completely unknown. And it's actually something that you have to lean into with immense curiosity. And I invite you to step into your own mystery that is unfolding right now. And don't let even my own conviction and my own clarity, don't allow that to bulldoze over this creative, pregnant space between, because it's ripe with tremendous potential for what's next in your life. As long as you don't fixate me into an authority position, or you don't memorize some kind of clever, really insightful thing that I say so that you can kind of integrate it and have it for yourself and use it from your own kind of inner-directed self-authoring self. So don't do those two things, and get curious, get uncertain, and see what happens.